You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Rape has been described as the bomb that continues to explode. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, this bomb has injured untold numbers of women, men, children, families, and communities, ripping apart the social and economic fabric of an already beleaguered and impoverished nation. Dr. Jill Trenholm has worked as a registered nurse in intensive care and in a sexual assault and domestic violence clinic in Canada, and as a student in peace and conflict studies. Most recently, Jill has focused on rape and war. Her dissertation for Uppsala University in Sweden, Women Survivors, Lost Children, and Traumatized Masculinities, The Phenomenon of Rape and War in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, looks at how global and social structures, gender, ethnicity, and class intersect with war and sexual violence and its consequences. She's here with us today to talk about her findings. Hello, Jill. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Jill, sounds like a very terrible situation in East Congo. Can you describe the overall situation for people in East Congo and particularly that women are suffering through?
The war in Eastern Congo is going into about its 15th year, and there have been approximately 5 to 6 million deaths directly and indirectly related to this war. It began in earnest when the genocide ended in Rwanda and the Hutu rebels escaped into Congo. They are not the only problem there, though. There are a lot of other different ethnic groups also fighting each other. But the fact that Congo is a very resource-rich country has really complicated how the war has taken place. Women are used as part of the battlefield in fighting between the ethnicities. They've been claimed by different groups, and rebels have been the main perpetrators of that, but also the state army and civilians have been implicated. It seems that it's almost, excuse the phrase, but it's almost infectious because of the levels of impunity there. The country has very poor infrastructure and has had trouble in stemming the violence in the east because of the resource-rich nature of the land there.
I want to go into some depth in several of the things that you've mentioned there. First, could you lay out for us the seriousness of the situation that women face in terms of rape in the country?
The women that I talked with were mostly rural women, and I was stationed in Bukavu, which is 1 kilometer from the Rwandan border. It's a hub for humanitarian activities and has been last occupied in 2006, so I was able to carry out the research there. They have a hospital there that specializes in obstetrical fistula. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is, that's kind of an inadequate kind of healing when the soft tissues of the genitalia, uterus, and vagina have been damaged. In some of the cases where the women have been raped, it wasn't just penile penetration. The rebel groups have actually impaled their genitalia with sticks, glass shards, and often shot at their genitalia. So this is not just rape. It's a kind of war on women, because the soldiers that I had interviewed said that they would kill a man but rape a woman. So in the way that they rape women, it has a more longer lasting damage than if they just killed the woman. Kind of an ethnic cleansing, if you may.
No, I understand that the overall situation of conflict has been going on for 15 years, and so that must mean that the cost to people there is deepening. You mentioned 5-6 million lives. What other effects has that long-term conflict caused?
Well, a lot of the rural women I talk to are agrarians, so they support their families and earn a living by farming. in a situation where it's not always possible to get to your field because of the constant insecurity, there's indirect effects as well, like malnutrition of the children, malnutrition of the adults as well, but the children are particularly susceptible to that. When the rebel groups attack as well, oftentimes they force family members to rape each other or to witness raping of each other, so the psychological damage is exponential. Particularly in a culture where women are responsible for raising the children, they're primary caregivers. So it really affects more than just them. It reflects on all the other work that they carry out to support the community. The other thing is that women are often rejected by their community for fear they might have HIV or sexually transmitted infections. And men who are associated with this women, in their construct of masculinity, that they should be protectors and are unable to do so, they suffer great shame, and it also promotes the rejection of the women.
And you talked about one of the hospitals in the area in which you worked. How difficult is it for victims to find the care they need or the support that they need after being raped and violated?
It's extremely difficult. I mean, a research done out of Columbia University showed that even the hospitals or the clinics that were available were very poorly equipped, so they couldn't even handle some of the more difficult cases. The Pansy Hospital, which I worked, has done fantastic work, and the chief of that hospital, Dr. Dennis McQuege, has been actually given the Peace Prize here in Sweden, the Olof Palme Peace Prize, for speaking out for these vulnerable groups. They do really a lot of really good work, but they are situated in Bukavu, and a lot of the women that are suffering these rapes come from rural districts very far away. So there's often hospitals and clinics, but very few and not enough. And the mental health tends to be more of a back burner issue, because mental health also suffers even in high-income countries, enough care and enough resources.
Just hearing you describe the overall situation, I just find it unimaginable that level of systemic violence and disruption. I want to ask you about the connection here between cheap electronics and this situation.
Right. Well, that was one of the major findings from my research. I initially, as a nurse and a peace and conflict graduate, I went over to see what are the services for women, and I found myself having to look at a very much broader picture than just healthcare. The Congo was colonialized by the Belgian colonialists, and that was for about 60 years. Then followed by a very brutal dictatorship by Mobutu. And none of these leaders ever really honored the citizens of the country. So where there was exploitation of rubber with the Belgian colonialists, and where there was exploitation by Mobutu, he drained the coffers of that country. Now they have what's described as a fragile government. Congo is the size of Western Europe, and it has very poor infrastructure. In fact, in the center of the country is the second largest rainforest. So it's very difficult for the two ends of the country to communicate, Kinshasa in the west, where the capital is, and the east coast, the east borders. It has become kind of a nexus for the African continent. It's often called Africa's World War, because all the 9 bordering countries have been plundering resources and hiding out, etc., because of the impunity that persists there. Congo has 80% of the world's coltan, which is necessary for mobile phones, laptops, all your technological devices. The only other country that has coltan is Australia, and they have 20%. So as we contemplate a cheaper iPhone here in the West, in richer countries, young child soldiers are going deep into the earth, often dying doing so, scraping out these resources. There's a really good group in the United States called the Enough Project. You can find them on the internet. And they're really following this very closely, so they can provide a lot of information about how the resources of this country are being plundered and actually fueling the war. Human Rights Watch has actually reported that Western countries with mining interests there have actually paid rebels to guard their mines. And in those areas, the rebels are the main perpetrators.
It's easy in the West, in the North, to try to distance ourselves from a situation like this, where we say there's a country, they're in turmoil, you know, there's, you know, whatever kind of criticisms that you could make of of the culture there that supports rape and child soldiers and so forth, and all of the things that you've been describing. But how must we, as owners of mobile phones and of electronic devices that we get at a cost that doesn't account for this kind of terrible cost on people, what kind of connection do we need to make so that we can turn around that situation?
Well, the Enough Project, as well as another group in the UK called Congo Calling, have called for us to look at purchasing conflict-free minerals. I mean, this was done with diamonds years ago, and it's also been done with free trade coffee, etc. So our real power is in our buying power. So when you want to buy a mobile phone, you should write the company, Samsung, Nokia, or whatever, and ask them where they are sourcing their minerals. There is somebody in Germany who's looking at kind of a carbon footprint for finding out where minerals come from. But it's such a costly ordeal that it's very hard to find out where these minerals come from. So we have to call to task the producers of these materials to say, where are you getting your minerals, and are people dying from this? I mean, the connection is so close that a New York Times journalist once wrote, every time your mobile phone rings, you should hear a woman scream. And that's the connection between these two things.
Where do you see Congo's best hopes for the future and a kind of turnaround of this station, some kind of recovery? Where does that hope lie?
Well, it is a very complicated thing, which is probably why people steer clear of making any kind of simplistic statements about it. But when the first study I did, I talked to local leaders there, and I said, like, what is going on here? I'm interested in the rape that's happening to women and how we can prevent and help. They told me that people are so interested in the rape of women, but are they not looking under this tip of the iceberg to look at that women are rejected from community and there is a fear of HIV and sexually transmitted infections because of the lack of health care? Are people not looking at that the whole society is traumatized? Because it's not just the woman that's raped, but when you hear these stories daily, or you've been a member of a community which has been forced to witness these things, you are also severely traumatized. Then there's the state army, which is poorly disciplined, often not paid, doesn't have uniforms, etc. So they can't act as the preventative shield that they should. The chaos of war is everywhere, so it's not like they're just fighting over a front so that certain people can hide in other areas. Poverty plays a role. When I talked to child soldiers and they said, well, I joined the army because I needed a pair of pants. So, I mean, that's really base stuff. As well as inappropriate aid has been implicated in this. The fact that the leaders said we get rice and food when really we need infrastructure, we need roads, we need peace. We have a very rich country, but it doesn't seem that Africa is on the agenda in richer countries, because it, as Naomi Klein talks about disaster capitalism, sometimes it's okay for chaos to continue because at that point we can take resources there at very little cost. So this international apathy, the inappropriate aid, and the fact that women have a very low status there, the leaders said that all this plays a role into the women being raped. Although the West seems to be only concerned with women being raped, all these factors play into that.
Well, Jill, I really appreciate you joining me this morning and for bringing this terrible situation onto our radar, and we'll try and keep it there.
Yeah, and I thank you very much for having me, because I really think a lot of people want to help, but they don't know how, or they don't know the story, what's going on. So that's great. Thank you.
I guess we would have to say, just do something.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Dr. Jill Trenholm from Uppsala University in Sweden. Her dissertation is Women Survivors, Lost Children, and Traumatized Masculinities, the Phenomena of Rape and War in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.